Not Just a Game podcast with your host, Dr. Catherine Flick, Senior Lecturer in Computing and Social Responsibility at De Montfort University in Leicester.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Not Just a Podcast. This week I want to talk a little bit about heroes and being heroic and what that kind of means. So this kind of came out of one of the inputs that I got from people at PAX East when I was at PAX East. So at PAX East I go every year for the last 3 years now, and I have a booth in the Role for Diversity Lounge. And at that booth I ask people questions and I get them to answer by way of writing their answers down on post-it notes. And these questions that I ask are things like, what do you do in video games that you don't do in real life? And things like that. So, also, what advice would you give to industry? A whole bunch of questions that essentially get at some of the underlying ethical and social issues to do with video games. And also that basically allow people to tell me what their experiences with video games is like. So I'm kind of collecting experiences, and then I'm analysing those to get at what some of the issues are. So some of the good practice, some of the not so good practice, things that people like about games, things that people don't like so much about games. And one of those things that someone shared with me over these last 3 years was actually a response to what do you do in video games that you don't do in real life? And that answer was, be the hero. And over the years, other people have written similar sorts of things. So I asked these questions over a couple of years now. And also in other questions, people have told me what they like about doing in video games. And a lot of these things have been to do with being a hero. So whether that's to be the Dragonborn, to be kick-ass, to be someone that they want to be. But I think the idea of kind of being the hero captures the main ideas that these people have had and responded to on my wall. So I want to look briefly at what it is to be a hero, philosophically and ethically speaking, and how games allow us to experience that feeling and why it's kind of compelling. And also I want to talk a little bit about some of my favourite heroes as well. So the first thing to kind of get into is what actually is a hero. So there are the classical Greek heroes, which are usually warriors who have somewhat superhuman abilities like strength or wits, or whose risk-taking behaviour immortalises them throughout history. So in Greek times, this was a sort of a way for humans to become immortal, like the gods, because there were lots of stories about gods, and usually they had the better of people. Because they were immortal, they were able to live on even after many generations of people died. So the idea of heroes was to have people who managed to live on through the stories that were told about them. So, I mean, even these days we know of classical Greek heroes like Achilles and Perseus and maybe Heracles, if you're a bit of a history fan. In these classical stories, they tend to be driven by fate and often to tragic ends. So if you've read the story of Oedipus, he's a tragic hero. And they certainly were not all moral characters, so a lot of them had plenty of flaws. So further along down in history, and actually this is relatively recent history comparatively, there's been a lot of criticism written about, like sort of critical theory sort of stuff, written about heroism and heroes in stories. And Joseph Campbell's The Hero with a Thousand Faces really immortalized what's now called the monomyth theory. And the monomyth theory is this idea that most heroes follow some sort of pattern in their adventures. So their rise to heroism comes through a very similar style of story told about the quest that they go on and the different stages of that quest. So, for example, the beginning of the quest is the departure. So this is where the hero receives the quest and ventures forth upon it. the initiation, where the hero encounters and must overcome various trials and have some sort of adventure. And then the return, when the hero returns to his or her home with the powers bestowed upon them and the knowledge they have acquired from their adventures. So this particular theory has been used by many writers over the years, and the most famous relatively modern writer who's done this is George Lucas. And the whole Star Wars original series was really a telling of the monomyth story. Other writers often consciously or unconsciously use it, and to give a video game example, Journey is a game that the developers have specifically referred to the monomyth theory, and that their inspiration for their game came from this idea. However, there are plenty of other stories that have this theory in it as well, and I'm sure if you think about some of your favourite stories with a hero in it, there's probably some aspects of this particular theory, and there's a lot of discussion. It's actually quite a good article on Wikipedia about this if you're interested. I'll link it in the description. These days, though, outside of stories, modern heroes are much more complex, and these days we tend to compared to the Greek classical heroes, relatively everyday people can be heroes. So military veterans, firefighters, cancer victims, and footballers are all considered heroes. And heroes are entrenched in what are often called melodramatic surroundings, often with further real-world implications. So there's a paper by Elizabeth Anker in 2005 that describes the simultaneous victimization and heroism of America. I mean, this is America, the concept, not any particular people. On September 11, the attacks on New York had aroused America to become heroic and rescue itself, and the empathy engendered by its victim status gave it moral justification for its retribution. Retribution which was, in the cold light of day, for the most part politically motivated and often misguided. So what's this what this is saying is that when you have this sort of hero story that always comes with a kind of a cloud of melodrama around it, there's some sort of reason, quest that the hero has to go on, there's some sort of bad guy or bad entity or some sort of entity that the hero has challenged or something like that the hero has to face and overcome or seek vengeance for or whatever. So there's these sorts of requirements for being a hero are not always good requirements. They usually have some aspect of badness to them. And of course, though, there are some heroes that don't necessarily have this badness or victimization involved with their stories. And footballers, for example, is a very good example, as usually footballers are just good at their jobs, right? But their jobs are quite in the public eye. So when anything, you know, happens that most people would probably be able to get away with, say, for example, a minor criminal infraction or something like that, you know, maybe they take drugs or maybe their dog pooped in the park and they didn't pick up after it or whatever. The fact that they're a hero and they've done this bad thing makes it so much worse than if any normal person, like non-hero. So it kind of puts them on a pedestal, it objectifies them, it makes them less human because they now are not allowed to do anything that's wrong. So this is part of this hero thing, is that they're supposed to be this superhuman entity that's able to do no wrong. And so when we see footballers or whoever doing bad things, it makes that difficult kind of to reconcile their hero status. Also, I mean, there's melodrama on a greater level in the football field. For example, just look at Leicester City's meteoric rise to the Premier League this year. So, I mean, in this case, you had Leicester City, who were the underdogs, victimised by the big money clubs and the system that was holding them back. Yet, you know, with a low budget and a team of lovable misfits, they went on to win the day and the Premier League, which we're all very happy about here in Leicester. But, you know, that's football and this, you know, other larger concepts. What about games, though? What's the point of talking all about this, you know, classical heroes, monomyths, this victimization and melodrama stuff? So games, especially story games, are a form of immortalization of the characters involved. These are quite similar to these kind of Greek idea of immortalizing yourself by telling your stories. And by playing through the stories, you feel strongly connected to the character that you play and their immortalization process. Just as we like to watch Luke Skywalker's hero's journey, we enjoy even more the active participation and decision-making we have when we are the Dragonborn, or when we're Geralt of Rivia, or when we're the Inquisitor in Dragon Age Inquisition. For a short or perhaps a long period of time, we can step outside of our likely very non-melodramatic heroic lives and step into someone's who can kick ass or has superior strength or wit or other skills. And games allow us to not just passively experience the stories of those heroes, but actively partake in them. And this allows us to connect directly with that heroism and kind of take it on for ourselves. It's worthwhile thinking about how much heroism in real life is actually connected with this victimization, though. I mean, a hero only needs to swoop in to save the day when something bad's happened. And some of the time that's due to natural causes, and I'd say, you know, things like the conjunction of spheres that brings monsters into the world and the Witcher series is counting as natural causes. But more often in games, it's due to other people being horrible in some way. So if you look at Lara Croft's rebooted origin story, there's this idea that there's this sort of violent, traumatic past that she has, and it's mostly people that have done this to her, not some, you know, natural event. So it's important when we're making video games that we keep an eye on that relationship between the hero and the villain. Is the bad guy or girl only bad for badness's sake, to show the heroic qualities of the hero, or is there more to it than that? Who are the victims, and are they realistic and reasonable victims, or are they just objects of victimization for story progression's sake? There's nothing wrong with using the hero's journey as a method for telling a story, but it can get a little bit predictable, and it's much better in the long run if people can't recognise it as the hero's journey. So adding a bit more depth to the scenario by fleshing out these characters and actually giving them real motivations and real reasons for doing what they do and being where they are can be a lot better for these things. But what about the hero herself? What sort of traits does she have? So this is where I get into a little bit of the philosophy of things, because this really naturally kind of aligns with what we might consider, what's considered virtue ethics. And virtue ethics, we look at the nature of the character. And to put it simply, those who are of good character, who display what are called the virtues, tend to do good things. And courage, honesty, loyalty, these are all traditionally considered virtues and are often traits in heroic video game characters. Such virtues need not just be expressions of courage and honesty, but those which make the character. So they need to go all the way down with the character. Just because someone behaves honestly or shows courage doesn't necessarily mean that they are all the way down honest people. They may just be behaving this way because they don't want to get into trouble, rather than any deep down character of honesty. So Aristotelian virtue ethics, and this goes back to, we've got this ancient Greek thing going on at the moment, Aristotelian virtue ethicists draw a line between these fully virtuous people who act virtuously without a sort of internal struggle over their temptations and desires, and what are called the continent, who need to control these temptations and their desires to act virtuously. And there's a whole lot of discussion about, well, you know, surely people who have to overcome the temptation to do wrong are actually being more virtuous than those who just kind of do it because they don't have to think about it. And that's much too long a conversation for this small podcast. But if you're really interested in virtue ethics, I'll leave a couple of links in the description. You can go and have a look for yourself. The Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy is basically my go-to for these things, that in such a way that is kind of accessible to most people who are interested in philosophy anyway. So in virtue ethics, it's not just about these virtues and obviously vices, which are the other side of things. But there are other concepts such as the necessity for living virtuously in order to promote human flourishing, or as they call it, eudaimonia. And the idea that people need a kind of practical wisdom, or as they call it, phronesis, because, you know, they always need to have fancy words for these things. So this phronesis is the turning of a basic instinct to do virtuous things into virtues and thinking more broadly about their applications. So an example of that is not hiding a hurtful truth if such a truth will be good for that person in the long run. So it's that classic sort of, do I do the wrong thing for the right reasons? So that sort of stuff. And it's about making kind of decisions about what might be better in the long term rather than looking just at whether or not it's the right or wrong thing to do. And so this is actually why I like, in video games, I really like characters with these sort of solid backstories and really good motivations to play in my roleplay games particularly. I mean, I'm speaking mostly about roleplay games here because they tend to be the areas where these sorts of characters are fleshed out much more. I mean, I can understand in these games where their virtues and vices come from, you know, what they're all about and what they are deep down, all the way down, as is required by virtue ethics. And it's not just what the characters do, so it's not necessarily just how they behave, but it's about what is in character for them to do. So, I mean, in some of these more customizable games, so things like Dragon Age and even Mass Effect, a little bit of a grey area one because there is some backstory, but you mostly kind of make the character yourself. Anyway, but a lot of these sorts of games where you're customizing the character and you're kind of picking the sort of character you want to be, and this is particularly prevalent in some of the older style of roleplay games where you get lots and lots of different choices. And I think like Planescape Torment's a really good example because you really start with a completely blank slate and you can build up whatever type of character that you want to be. And Pillars of Eternity and stuff, they do that sort of thing in the more modern versions of these games. But in these sorts of customizable character games, like Skyrim, for example, it's always going to be a little bit more difficult for you to get into a character's skin. In order to understand this deep down character of the character that you're playing, compared with some of these characters that are much more fully fleshed out. So characters like Geralt of Rivia, Lara Croft, Batman, any of these other sort of identifiable characters that have, you know, lore and backstory and everything going for them that you can kind of read up on and understand and think, oh yes, no, Geralt would always pick Yennefer, would never pick Triss, blah, 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 you know, all that sort of stuff. Unless you've got a very vivid imagination, of course. So role players, for example, love these customizable characters because they can do whatever they like with them. But then they might get a bit annoyed with some of the character dialogue options. So I know a lot of people were particularly grumpy when BioWare in the Dragon Age series moved from the very literal sentences the non-speaking character protagonist said versus the fully voice-acted Hawk and Inquisitor characters, because the dialogue options presented were not necessarily what the character ended up actually saying, and sometimes things are taken out of context, etc., etc. Actually, I was reading a really good thread on Reddit recently about that happening in The Witcher. There was a good discussion about actually it's what he's thinking and what he says are not necessarily the same thing, and there's this big discussion about what would Geralt actually be doing and thinking when he's actually saying this stuff. And you can't have that same conversation about the Inquisitor or, you know, the Dragonborn or some of these more customizable characters, because there's no real lore about that. You don't really know what they would actually do except for your own interpretation of that character. So there's a little bit of a difference in terms of that, and people can get frustrated with that, those dialogue options and things not accurately representing the character. So, I mean, this all said, what do we do? I mean, do we have fully fleshed out and backgrounded heroes with these kind of deep-seated virtues and vices that we can point to lore and have lots of backup for and, you know, read and analyze and argue with people on the internet about? Or do we have customizable characters that for some people kind of lack some depth? And I mean, I don't know about you, but with these customizable characters, at least for the first playthrough, I tend to play myself. Like, I'd act exactly like I would, you know, if I were confronted with particular decisions that I had to make. And sometimes, you know, it actually reveals some things about yourself, and it reveals to you what your character traits are. And that's actually, I find, quite an interesting experience. So, I mean, maybe think about next time you're playing one of these decision-making type games where you can play a customizable character. Do you play yourself? Do you play yourself with, you know, maybe an evil twist? Or do you play yourself with some particular goal or something that changes one of these character traits about you? You know, maybe you're playing a thief or something. So instead of always telling the truth, you actually lie, for example, and you're not honest. And yeah, I mean, this is the fact that you have to sit down and then fully think through, okay, well, I mean, I'm going to be playing a character. If you want to make any changes, you have to think about what those changes are going to be. So yes, if I'm a thief, I should probably lie, and therefore I'm not going to be honest, and therefore I should just be dishonest all of the time, or for most of the time, or when it benefits me, because I'm quite selfish because I'm a thief and I want to get all the money for myself, or whatever it is. So you think about these goals and you think, okay, take on some of these virtues, some of these vices. But it may be that you're a very loyal thief. Maybe you're loyal to your friends or to your guild or something, and you wouldn't even contemplate not stepping in between your friend and some aggressor or a monster or whatever. And so there's that sort of sense of loyalty, which is very in-depth to you. But you have to think about these things, right? And the things that tend to come naturally are probably the sorts of traits that you have within you anyway. But yeah, I mean, you have to think about these characters when you build them, even if you just think for half a second, or if you are a really hardcore role player and sit there for hours thinking about it, or write fan fiction or whatever it is. You need to think about these virtues and these vices even as you develop this character. So yeah, I mean, what do you do? Do you play yourself? Do you play characters that you can't be in real life? Do you play the deceptive but loyal rogue? Or do you prefer these sorts of fleshed out background characters that you don't really have to think too hard about in terms of, you know, taking on a character, but which help you to make decisions because you kind of know what their background is and what their character, what's in character for them to do. And then the next question, I guess, to challenge you with is, do you think your games actually support your decisions properly? If you want to go and play an evil version of yourself, is there actually good support for that in the game? And I mean, I remember the first time I played an evil version of myself was in Knights of the Old Republic, and the kind of, you know, Sith Lord track was not as well developed as the good Jedi track, because I just think mostly they didn't really think that people would necessarily want to play it so bad, like so evilly, not so badly. And so a lot of the problems were with that was that if you said, oh, I'm just going to kill everyone, then it meant that you couldn't actually finish the quests and things like that. So it meant that there wasn't actually good support for some of these traits they were encouraging you to have by the system in the game. So do you think your games support you properly if you want to play virtuous or characters with vices that you wouldn't normally play? And then, of course, also, who's your favourite hero to play? So my current favourite hero is Geralt. I've mentioned him a couple of times now, but I'm like super hype about Blood and Wine. I mean, it comes out in approximately 23 minutes, although you'll get this podcast tomorrow, so I'll probably be busy playing it then. But hey, I'm pretty hype about that. So I'm very eager to get back into Geralt's, well, I'd like to say Geralt's trousers, but, you know, get back onto Roach and travel about the countryside as Geralt, because I really like his character, and I like his background, and I've also been, you know, reading the stories, and I've been reading the lore, and I've been playing the older games and things like that, so I feel like I know Geralt, and I think I know how he answers things. And it's a little bit like me, but, you know, he's a slightly different version of me, and I like to take in my own kind of character traits into that story as well, because it feels like then it reflects back on me somehow. But anyway, hopefully you've enjoyed this little discussion about heroes. Please leave some comments in the comment section on the website, and yeah, I mean, you can talk to me on Twitter as well, because that's a nice place to talk about these things too. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Not Just a Game podcast. The music in this podcast is Hot Machine Cold Surface by Ben Prunty on OC Remix. The graphics are from the Noun Project.